Hello and salam alaikum. I'm Shalina Jan Mohammed and welcome to Muslim Women Talk Ramadan, a new podcast by Muslim women for Muslim women. Think of this podcast as your BFF, Ramadan pep talk and weekly hug all wrapped up in one. Ramadan is our most blessed month. I sometimes describe it as being peak Muslim. There's a lot we're feeling. Excitement, perhaps apprehension, or even anxiety. There's a lot to do. Cooking, cleaning, organising, still working, the kids. And there's a lot we want to achieve.
I guess processing some of my personal things as well as experiencing just the magic of this month.
Connecting maybe to the places of worship more.
Unlocking those senses and testing my limits.
I'm hoping to have enough time to engage in the practices that will really help me in this rejuvenation process.
I know I have big plans at the beginning of every Ramadan, but then I'm also grappling with the physical demands of fasting and all the stuff to do.
When my son is at school, I'm usually working.
The most overwhelming is probably trying to keep the balance of your fast with your tarawih, with going to classes, with cooking, with doing your daily routine.
Having the lioness share of the responsibility of, you know, ensuring that we are prepared.
And the pressure to look Instagram ready and get all those decorations up and do the big iftars. And as a mum, to play that role that I sometimes think of as chief memory officer to make Ramadan really magical for the kids. For me, this Ramadan is going to be challenging. Over the last few years, I've been caring for my parents who were elderly and ill. And so Ramadan was oriented around their needs. Very different Ramadans to the typical routines that we might imagine because their timings were always the priority. Sadly, they've both passed away. My dad most recently just before the new year. So I know that I'm still on that grief journey. And I'm also going to have to deal with a lot of firsts. A first Ramadan without either of them, a first Eid without either of them, a first month without their du'as and without their reminders. It's really hard to say that out loud. But it also means that the inbuilt service that I was giving is also no longer there. I may have more time for the children and for the rituals of worship. I do need to figure out how to do Ramadan differently. Which is why I hope that this podcast will be a place of support for all of us. Because I know that I'm not the only one experiencing challenges inside me while also managing what's around me. Fortunately, we're going to have some great conversations to help us have our best Ramadan yet. And of course, there are always bright spots. In my house, my daughter is about to experience her first Ramadan, and I'm curious to know what she and her older sister make of it all. You'll hear them next. Then we'll go on a journey step by step through Ramadan to get to, inshallah, a successful Ramadan, maybe even our best one yet. I've learned that having someone who can walk with you and support the journey is such a gift, and we're very blessed to have Henrietta Sawati, who is going to do just that for us. Plus, I have an amazing behind-the-scenes conversation with Baroness Saida Warsi, what her Ramadan is like and what she's going to do to up the sisterhood as well as tackle Islamophobia. So let's get started. So that giggling you can hear is one of my daughters, Hannah and Iman. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam.
So I was trying to think about what this part of the podcast would be called. The podcast is obviously Muslim Women Talk Ramadan, and the best that I came up with was Muslim Girls Talk Ramadan. Don't pull that face at me. Do you have any better suggestions?
Radical Ramadan.
Okay, interesting.
Don't think so. I think that's a great name already.
Oh, Hannah, you're such a music to my ears. Okay, so which one are we going for?
Radical Ramadan with Maharani's Talk Ramadan and also Muslim Girls also
Talk. Okay, I think for the purposes of brevity, we'll go with Muslim Girls Talk Ramadan. So Hannah and Iman, welcome to Muslim Girls Talk Ramadan. Iman, tell me, I should know this, how old are you these days?
24,000 and 9.
You've turned 9. I'm a bit worried what people are listening to this thinking. So you're 9. And this is going to be your first full Ramadan, isn't it? How are you feeling?
Excited, but nervous that I might accidentally eat some food when I'm helping you or Abu cook.
What did you do for last year's Ramadan? Remind me.
I did 3 fasts and I ate butter by mistake.
That's very specific, thank you. What's on your agenda for this Ramadan?
I'm going to make some decorations because I'm very excited for my first Ramadan. So I'm going to go all out with decorations.
Hannah, you've been fasting for a few years now because I remember you are 13 this year.
Yes, I am.
Yay, mummy points. How do you find Ramadan?
I think I enjoy Ramadan a lot. And I think at the beginning it was like a bit hard. And I think even doing a few days was quite hard. But then over time it just has gotten a lot easier and it's become like more of a habit now. So yeah, I enjoy Ramadan a lot more now.
Have you got any advice for Iman for her first full one this year?
Yeah, I think just enjoy it while it lasts and then obviously get ready for Eid afterwards. But yeah, I think it's really great.
And the presents.
And the presents.
I guess that focuses the mind. What's your plan for Ramadan this year, Hannah?
I think this does sound really strange, but I really love like baking and cooking in Ramadan. And especially like for iftar time, which I really enjoy. And having like all the meals there and just spending time with family and things.
What do your friends think of it when you're fasting at school?
I think I'm quite lucky. So I have quite a few Muslim friends. And so it's quite nice to like be all in it together. And also the friends who aren't Muslim, they are also really nice too and really helpful. They do get worried a lot that they eat in front of me while I'm fasting. But honestly, I think they're really supportive of everything too.
That's really lovely to hear. How does the school manage when you're fasting?
I think the school really does help, I suppose. They don't really, they like support you whatever you want to do. So if you want to fast, then they'll let you do that. Sometimes they'll even let you miss PE if you really want to. But yeah, I think they do try and help as much as they can.
This is going to sound like a bit of a strange question. Why do you fast?
One of the reasons is because of the Quran and we follow the Quran. And also because we want to feel what it's like to be less fortunate and not have these. And also fasting isn't just about not eating, it's also about not getting angry and being kind. So that also helps your like you to be more kind to people.
And Hannah, what about you?
I think it's like it really affects like your mind and like your view on the world, because it just generally fasting and like just Ramadan in general helps you your mind become clear.
When I'm talking in the podcast to the inspiring grown-ups, I'm going to give them a quick fire quiz round.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd try the same with you. What do you think?
Quick fire quiz.
Can you do that again?
Quick fire quiz.
Okay, I feel like I should have a bell now. All right, girls, what is the best thing about Ramadan?
Iftar.
Yeah, iftar and all the yummy foods.
Do you like food? I'm getting the impression you like the food in Ramadan.
And the spending time with other people too.
Especially the iftar.
Spending time with other people over iftar.
Is it better to be at school or on holiday when you're fasting?
I think personally, I prefer to be at school. And like when I started fasting, I thought, and I was really disappointed that we weren't fasting in the holidays because I thought that would be so much easier. But I genuinely found it better to fast at school time because I think it really distracts you from fasting.
What could I do more of to make Ramadan more amazing?
Nothing, because you're a great mummy.
Yes.
But You can buy decorations.
Finally, what's your hope or your dua for Ramadan, for yourself or our family, or for all the lovely people listening, or for the world?
To be more kind.
To just spend more time with each other.
That wasn't a quick fire quiz, it was so slow.
Well, thank you for your feedback, Hannah and Iman. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kadafis, even though I'm going to see you later.
My next guest is Henrietta, who's going to be our Ramadan BFF for this and the next three episodes. Welcome, Henrietta, and salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Henrietta focuses on developing leadership for corporations and not-for-profit organisations, and her approach is rooted in Islamic spirituality and neuroscience. She has coached and mentored hundreds of men and women to find their way in the world, and she's the author of Heart Smart, One Woman's Journey from Her Head to Her Heart. She says her pet peeves are dishonesty, artificial anything, and sneakiness, so I guess I better watch out. But she has got some impressive credentials, and she's incredibly human and a Muslim woman on her own journey like the rest of us, which is why I'm thinking of her as our Ramadan BFF. So tell us, what's been keeping you busy in the run-up to Ramadan?
The same thing that does every year is about fretting and being anxious about not being able to fast properly, but also how do I make it a real, authentic Ramadan? How do I tailor make Ramadan to myself? How do I grow in this month instead of fretting and thinking and worrying about the pressures and all the things that are around me, usually in my community and in my family?
Now, you're going to be with us each week on this Ramadan journey. Tell us what we're going to cover.
So I'm very excited because I have chosen some topics that I personally struggle with. And I think all of us need to talk about compassion, self-respect, and kindness. These are the three big topics. And of course, we set out the road. And I'm really hoping to give some practical, doable, tangible things that we can all do together so we can support ourselves, so we can support the collective.
I am really excited to see how we're going to map this road ahead, but I do feel like it's quite important, if we're going to talk about this in a real way, that we acknowledge that we're all starting Ramadan in different places. You know, there might be a mum who's juggling childcare and work, or people who might be pregnant or menstruating. There's other people who are not fasting, maybe due to old age or ill health, and some people will be travelling. And for some people, it's the physical challenge. And for others, it might be the mental health challenges, including things like anxiety or depression, even eating disorders. And spiritually, it's not a competition, even though sometimes we can think of it like that. So as we start on mapping this road, what I'm particularly looking forward to is the ethos of what you are going to work with us on. And you've described that as not doing Ramadan, but being in Ramadan, and that the doing Ramadan and the being Ramadan are two different things. So help us set the tone for this approach.
It's very fascinating for me to see when people set out to Ramadan. I think we have a mindset of thinking, this is how Ramadan should be. This is how I have always done it. And instead of looking at every single Ramadan as an individual growth process, we kind of try to live up to some sort of expectations that are either are set by us or is set by others. So I am hoping that on this journey together, we will look at individual growth journey. We will look at the idea of what it means to us every single day to be conscious, remain conscious. And instead of just doing Ramadan, let's be in Ramadan. And what I mean by that is a very interesting concept that I don't think many of us talk about is that there's a part of us which is all about doing. A part of our brain, and from neuroscience we know this, part of our brain is the network around the brain, which is talking about the focus, the task positive, the things that we need to get going to do, is only one part of us. And our entire education system is about developing the doing part of ourselves, how to get from one thing to the next, how to finish this coursework, how to go X, Y, and Z. But what we don't think about often, and those of you who have children, you probably know this. Those of you who have pets, you know this. There is a side of us which is about the being of us, just simply be in the moment, simply accepting things, simply being in a situation without the actual thinking, what I do I need to do next? Think about who you are, not what you do.
There is that lovely phrase, isn't there, that we are human beings, not human doings.
Absolutely, absolutely. You have to put away some of your doings throughout the month, because physically you cannot. And I always say this to people, that if you want to keep doing what you do in the other 11 months in Ramadan, you are not really taking Ramadan in your stride. What you are doing is you're trying to squeeze in everything you do otherwise alongside the fasting. But the whole purpose of Ramadan is put things away and focus on your being.
And that's presumably why Ramadan can feel more challenging, because we're carrying on with that busy life and then we're adding to what's already quite stressful. And I think, you know, certainly speaking for myself and lots of Muslim women I talk to, it's like everything is just bursting on the edges and it just takes a tiny thing to make it all fall apart. But the challenge is, how do you take the pace down? Because there are new things you have to do in Ramadan. Sometimes there are more responsibilities. The schedule is much tighter. You got to get iftar on the table. How do you take the pace down so that you can be more?
So I believe the best way to do it is, part of your preparation for Ramadan is that you start clearing your diary, which I'm sure a lot of people already are doing. But I would like to encourage even more to, if you can, to clear your diary and go on a sabbatical for a month and do absolutely...
Literally on my phone, hit connect cancel.
Very little work. But what I also mean by that is to reorganize and restructure the way you work and really start listening to your body, to your soul, to your entire being, because they will ask very different questions. Doing is, but when you cut down, just as the amount of work, but the intensity of the work that we have. So in our household, for example, I am fasting with people who are extremely excited about fasting, and they just carry on as if nothing happened. I am on the opposite spectrum, and it's a very big, it's a challenging situation. But I always say to them, everybody has to respect their body and what they can do and what they can't. So I clear my diary, I take on much less work, and I encourage people to try to do that. And I know a lot of people are thinking, but I can't do because I have to pay bills. So that's part of the preparation, is by the time Ramadan comes, we should have a clear diary for ourselves, because there is no other month this in the year where we can actually really focus on the being side of us.
It's so refreshing to hear you talk so openly and honestly about the physical challenges of fasting, because when I hear our conversations about fasting, it is difficult physically, but it's often as though we shouldn't talk about the fact that it's hard.
And, you know, I really appreciate you saying this, because I think people don't understand also that I've been fasting for 23 years. Every single Ramadan is hard in a different way. One year, it's the tiredness. Another year is my ego. Another year is the hunger, the actual physical difficulty. So we need to understand that as human beings, we are not static. We are going through cycles, and we have got daily cycles. We have got weekly cycles. In our tradition, everything is prescribed. So we have got to understand that this cycle that we are going through this year is not the same as it was last year or how it is going to be next year. So we need to respect that. Our bodies, especially women's bodies, as we age, the hormones are changing. Everything is changing. So I can physically not be in the same fasting person how I was last year. Maybe last year I aced it and I felt amazing. But this year I won't be able to, because my hormones have moved and shifted and I've got more cortisol, I've got more adrenaline, I've got, you know, all sorts of changes going on. So I think this is, for me, this is what it means to personalize Ramadan, that every year we have to go with day by day of how we feel, and we need to respect that.
I am so nodding furiously at all this discussion about how our bodies are changing and our hormones are changing. We talked about the gap or the shift between doing and being, but there is another gap that's coming through in what you're saying, which is between who we are and who we want to be. Talk about that gap a little bit and how we bridge it.
Oh, that's another favorite topic of mine, because I think it goes something like this. We all know how a perfect Ramadan looks like, and we all aspire to do that. And I think we are inundated with information from scholars and lectures, and we've got so much available, and if that's what we need, we will go and we will get it. But I also I'm more aware that we are actually shutting off a reality of people how fasting actually feels like. So one of the things that I want to bring in here, which I think is a really important one, in terms of neuroscience, And for me, everything has neuroscience to it. So you know me, I love talking about this stuff. There is a part of us which is the personality. And that's the person who manages the stuff of life. This is the person who is dealing with things, who is taking the kids to school and doing all the things that we need to do, cleaning the kitchen, cooking, preparing, struggling, praying, all of that. But there is another part of us which we often forget, and this is what Ramadan is asking us to do, which is the centered self, the closer to the divine self. So this whole idea of fasting is about removing the personality, removing the triggered self, remove the ego, remove the person who is constantly responding, and actually come back to our center of how we were created by God and how we were centered when we were born. And I remember, every year I remember this, my daughter was born, and as soon as we put her on the resuscitator, she just kind of pushed herself up, and she looked around, and it's almost like saying, I'm here, and this is who I am. And that's her essence. And I think we are born with that essence, but slowly, slowly that gets eradicated and we get conditioned into a personality. And I think when we understand the difference, we will value Ramadan a lot more, because Ramadan is an invitation for that centered self, for the divine, confident, you know, the fitra, as we talk about. This is who we are when we come to this world, and slowly, slowly become a personality who is just managing life instead of being.
Give us some practical tips, really easy things that we can do so that from listening to this and this conversation, we can get ourselves to the next waypoint, the next wayfarer's stop, where we can break and we'll reconvene and we'll have this conversation. What can we do to help us set off?
So one of the things that I do myself, I actually do this every week. I always have two lists, and I love lists. I think hopefully some of you who are listening also love lists. When we do a to-do list, it's very easy, but we hardly think about a to-be list. So what do I need to do is fantastic, and it's important, and you can tick off and you feel great. But when you write down, who do I want to be this week or this month or today? Who do I need to be so I get closer to who I want to be? It's not many of us who do this reflection. So I would recommend before Ramadan, put down during and before Ramadan, put down the ideas of your doing list, but also how do you want to come out on the other end? Who would you like to be just on the day before Eid? How do you want to feel? What's that being? What's that essence? And I'm talking about the essential qualities, whether it's to be more compassionate, to be kinder, to be softer, to be more gentle with yourself, to be more gracious. There are so many wonderful words. And take a dictionary out and find your word that resonates, that how do you want to walk in the world after Ramadan is finished.
And that is a beautiful invitation for us to enter into Ramadan. Think about, what do we want to be? Thank you so much, Henrietta. We'll talk to you on the next episode.
Thank you, inshallah.
I promised you that we will be talking to pioneering women from all walks of life, and that is definitely an apt description of my first guest, Baroness Saida Warsi. Saida was Britain's first Muslim cabinet minister, as well as a lawyer, TV presenter, author, and now a podcaster with her new podcast, A Muslim and a Jew Go There. She was the chairman of the Conservative Party and served as Minister for Faith and Communities, as well as in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. She's also a wife, mum, and grandma. She's vocal about publicly challenging Islamophobia and is a fierce champion for women. Baroness Saida Warsi, welcome. Salaam alaikum and Ramadan alaykum Mubarak.
Khair Mubarak to you as well, Mubarak.
So we've got Ramadan coming. So I'm going to start this conversation with a quick fire Ramadan quiz. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Quick fire quiz.
Aside from dates, what do you break your fast with?
Water.
What do you prefer, iftar or suhoor?
Iftar every time.
That sounds like a woman who enjoys her evening meal. Are you eating your iftar at home or somewhere else?
As often as I can at home, preferably every single day.
Now, this year, Ramadan iftar is going to be early because of the time change for the first 3 weeks. So are you giving up caffeine, or is it all about that late night cup of tea or coffee?
I only have about one or potentially two coffees a day. So I come off it very quickly. So I don't think I'll be having tea or coffee in the evening.
Do you know what? I used to come off it quite well. And then in the last few years, maybe because I'm getting older, I've had the shakes. It's actually quite good. Yeah, it's
you see, painful. For me, I have to tank up on water. My biggest issue during Ramadan is dehydration.
Have you got one of those giant water bottles? My daughter has it with a straw and she kind of carries it around.
Well, it's not a straw, but it is a giant water bottle. But what I'll do is I will spend between iftar and sehri just having lots and lots of water. And then actually staying awake because I'm going to the toilet.
I was about to ask the next question. What is more important, eating or sleeping?
Sleeping.
A woman after my own heart, me too. It's hard to say that in Ramadan, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would rather go without food than go without sleep.
That is tough, especially when we've had the really long fasts. What is the hardest thing about Ramadan?
For me, I think it's switching off because Ramadan comes around and everybody thinks they're now entitled to a piece of you. Family and friends you haven't seen want to have you there for Ramadan, public events, public iftars, and Ramadan is the one part of the year where I want to be selfish. I want it to be about me and I want to recharge my batteries and I want to connect with my faith and I want to find some peace for my soul and I genuinely want my prayers and my understanding of my faith to be front and center. And it's really hard when you're constantly pulled back into the daily grind.
Well, I want to come on in a while to talk about how you strike that balance between the public you and the private you. We asked you the hardest thing about Ramadan. What's your favorite Ramadan activity?
Just having time for prayer. I know that sounds like a weird thing,
that's lovely.
So
it's beautiful.
At the moment, prayer is I'll fit it in when I can, whereas Ramadan is everything else has to fit in around prayer. And that level of, I mean, you know, look, probably selfish is the wrong word that I'm using, but that level of focusing on spirituality and making it front and center rather than an afterthought is probably, for me, the most wonderful part of Ramadan.
So for a lot of people, Ramadan is a huge deal. It is this transformative month. You know, I've done research in the work I do about how for 8 weeks people are just out of action. But often the image we have of that transformative month is the big iftar, it's the socializing, it's the mosque, it's the community, it's the cooking and the feeding. And there is something really lovely about that sense of kind of being with other people like you. What's it like at Sheikh Saida in Ramadan?
Everything you've just said should be Ramadan and is what makes Ramadan amazing, that sense of community. But, you know, for me, 11 months of the year are community, where every aspect of my life is interlinked with what's going on in the community and being part of, you know, providing and supporting and all of that work that I do. And so the way I deal with Ramadan is I give about 2 weeks to that. And then 2 weeks are for me when I will settle down and make it about spirituality. And it's those 2 weeks that I really enjoy.
Do you know what's really interesting listening to you talk about that kind of shutting yourself off for the last 2 weeks or taking time off is that men have a ritual. They have i'tikaf and, you know, it's almost legitimized that they can go to the mosque or they can be at home and just totally shut down. It does feel like as women that, I mean, that's not traditionally something women do. You wouldn't go and stay at the mosque. But even conceptually, do you think that's maybe something we should try and institutionalise?
I think there's a lot of women that do i'tikaf now.
Do they?
And so I've met lots of women of my mum's generation who now do it, who just kind of cut themselves off, but do it in the home. So we'll kind of put themselves in one part of the home and then they're just left alone.
I wish I had one of those to escape from my children.
You know, we're quite lucky because we're empty nesters now. And so I could do that, you know, because that is literally only my other half who's in the house most of the time. But I also think that there is, you know, I'm not sure if something happened, something quite big happened, either in the family or in the community, I would feel terrible if I felt like I really couldn't come back in and play my part.
Do you set an out of office? I'm 000 for spiritual nourishment.
My office say she's now in Ramadan and we'll get back to you in about a week and a half, 2 weeks' time. So I think the good thing is that I have a brilliant office who manage the world whilst I try and find myself.
Any thoughts for those of us who don't have offices, how we should do that?
Set an out of office.
and just, we'll redirect them to your office.
Yeah, redirect them to my office. But it's... I just think that sometimes you just need to step back and say, why am I doing this? What is the purpose of this? What's my space in the kind of wider community and the world? What did I do right? What did I do wrong? How can I be better next year? All of those kind of self-evaluation moments and coming back stronger and better is for me a really important part of Ramadan. It's a take stock moment.
I think sometimes it's quite easy to feel lonely as a Muslim woman and to feel all these pressures, which to me seem to come out a lot in Ramadan, this pressure to be the idyllic, perfect, kind of almost like a Christmas advert type of woman that's responsible for the perfect Ramadan when you're at home. And then when you're out in the public space, you can feel that the world is looking at you as a Muslim woman. You know, I wear a hijab, so, you know, I'm conscious I'm quite visible as a Muslim woman. I think lots of people are. And I think you're right that in the sisterhood, that's what we're trying to do in this podcast, right? In the sisterhood, you feel seen. Are there things that we as Muslim women can do to put that magic dust into the sisterhood?
Yeah, I think kindness, openness. So I have a rule. If you've got something bad to say about somebody, say it to their face. And if you've got something good to say about somebody, say it behind their back, right? It's a really interesting rule. So if I'm upset with you at something, I will pick up the phone and say, Shalina, this is what I had an issue about. Explain to me.
To be honest, I was much more interested in what you were saying behind my back.
Whereas, and I always want you to ring me up and say, I met somebody the other day, you know, and they were saying, you were saying really lovely things about me. Always say lovely things about other women behind their back. And then don't tell them you've said lovely things about them. Let them discover that for themselves if they do. And if they don't, that's fine. You've put out that magic dust into the world and it will create lightness. But if you've got something bad to say to another woman, just pick up the phone and say it to them one-to-one, sort it out and then forget about it. And I think it's a really good way in which you create honest, solid relationships. Secondly, we all rise together. And when I see, you know, women in the past who have trained either in the legal space or in business or mentored, who are firing on all cylinders, it is phenomenal because your success doesn't just come from you. Your success comes from every other person who you touch. And actually, you're a pretty rubbish leader if all you've done is become a leader but not created any leadership around you. So how do you create that broader sense of leadership? Telling people, actually, we're not in competition, right? We're actually working collaboratively on so many issues because ultimately your success or your failure doesn't determine my success or my failure.
I love that sense of connectivity that you've given in all of those kind of tips that are working for you. I wonder if as Muslim women, sometimes we underestimate ourselves and our power. Why is it important for Muslim women to step up?
Because we are half the population within Muslim communities, that I would say, you know, coming from an all-female, I'm one of five, my mum's one of seven, you know, we're huge female families. And I constantly see this. I see it in the next generation with my granddaughters who already know what they want and who they are. And clearly there's something instinctively clear about leadership within women, and they do it all with a big heart. And so I think we have no choice but to, I think, allow this powerhouse in our community to reach its full potential, because I think at that point the community will reach its full potential.
Now, thinking about Muslim women and speaking up, you have just launched a podcast, A Muslim Woman and a Jew Go There. Tell us about that.
So if you think about what's happened since the war in Gaza, where the overwhelming conversation that I've had from specifically Muslim communities is that they feel silenced, that they feel they can't have the conversations that they need to, that they don't know what language they can and they can't use, and what's appropriate and what isn't. And I just felt that some of those conversations needed to be had with our Jewish friends. And I thought there's no point talking to ourselves. We needed to create the space to have the conversation in a compassionate, kind way, but also in an honest way. And so David Badil, who I've worked with in the past, we felt that we needed to bring these conversations out in the open. So the podcast, which is called A Muslim and a Jew Go There, has had one episode out. And now the second one and third one, you know, hopefully over the coming weeks. And we address some really tough subjects. And I'm really pleased that, you know, rather than people talking about us and for us, we're talking about ourselves together.
That seems to be the key, isn't it? It's just speaking up for yourself and managing, thinking about this podcast and Ramadan coming. It's managing it on your own terms and not having to do it in the way anyone else tells you that you have to do Ramadan. Which leads me to my final question. What's one piece of advice you would give to Muslim women who might feel that Ramadan is too much or Ramadan is not enough that you feel has helped you in Ramadan?
Ramadan is about community. Ramadan is about family. Ramadan is about spirituality. But Ramadan is also about you reconnecting with God and with your faith. So do all the things that need to be done for everybody else, but also make sure that you take time out for yourself, because this is as much about you and your relationship to God as it is all the other things.
Baroness Saeed Owarsi, thank you for joining us, and Ramadan Mubarak to you.
Khair Mubarak.
Wasn't that fascinating, going behind the scenes with Baroness Saeed Owarsi? Fabulous conversation. You've been listening to Muslim Women Talk Ramadan with me, Shalina Jan Mohammed. In next week's podcast, we will be talking about compassion as we begin the second week of Ramadan. I'll be joined once again by our amazing Ramadan BFF, Henrietta, and I'll be checking in with my daughters on how they are getting on in their Ramadan. And then I have some very exciting news about our next guest. It is going to be Nadia Hussein. Drumroll, excitement. So join me next time for all of that excitement and to go on our Ramadan journey on Muslim Women Talk Ramadan.